Hey friends, what are you at? Josh here. Today I'm joined by a full-time musician and champion bloke, Jake Casey. I've known Jake for probably over a decade now, and as you'll hear through the episode, I met him through the rumoured mysterious Rudy. Also, we find out that Jake was actually around and in the picture of the old Sodens before it closed down. So, although I didn't meet him at that point, he remembers what it was like when the pub was closing down, which is a pretty big moment, I guess, for me personally, but also for the heavier, more alternative music genres, whether it be hip-hop to punk rock to hardcore to heavy metal, all the different derivations of metal. It was a big moment, and Jake was actually there for part of that, which you'll hear about. We also talk about how Jake got into music, how he got off to a bit of a rough start with his music taste, which thankfully became much, much better thanks to, I think, a Blue Light Disco, where he heard one particular song and that changed his whole musical life. So without any further ado, this is Jake Casey. My name is Josh Liston. You're listening to Punching Sideways. It's all about Albury-Wodonga and the surrounding regions. Thank you for listening once again and enjoy the episode.
Our biological overlord asked us to play him some music. We chose Backstreet Boys. He threw water on our circuit boards and it created a red light disco. He said, better, much better. Go to punchingsideways.com.
That's perfect. Welcome, Jake. Welcome to the podcasting den.
I'm enjoying this look, mate.
It's actually probably as much a muso den since I've gotten back into music.
A little bit of column A, a little bit of column B, Joshua.
Yes.
And no pants.
That's column C, I guess. column C.
Yeah, or column D.
I think C might cover it. So the reason you're here today is because not only have we been mates for probably over a decade now, I guess.
Yep.
Since back, I think Rudy and yourself, my friend Rudy and your friend, you might have worked at WOW together? Or
actually, the first time I ever saw you, I just moved to Albury and it was one of the last days or weeks of Sodens.
Okay.
So I didn't know a single person, heard that there was bands on, and I was like, oh, sweet, come from a music background, I'm going to go check this out. Went down there, and you guys were playing.
Really? Towards the end?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, that doesn't ring a bell, but I do remember we played before
I remember running into Dan Caulfield. Like, he was probably the first person I met in the group before anything else, before I sort of knew anyone. And I was like, oh, you're the bass player from Sodens? And he's like, yeah. And obviously he got it all the time because he's a band whore. Yeah. But, that was my first introduction to Albury music scene. It was that night. I didn't know a single soul. I walked in and was just blown away. Then I went back there a couple of weeks later and was shut down.
Yeah.
So
let's talk about that.
Yeah, mate.
What's it like to come into a situation where you're into music and there's this legacy venue that has all this history, but you get there when it's already on a downtrend?
Well, I just thought it was just my luck following me from Sydney to Albury.
Yeah.
You know, I got all excited because I'd heard a lot of the rumours about Albury, the music scene, especially Sodens, and the type of music that I was personally into.
Yeah.
Get down there, had a great night by myself. I don't even think I talked to anyone. I was so young, naive and quiet, the opposite of person that I am now. It was the greatest night I've ever had without having to talk to anybody. Really enjoyed the different types of bands, like the aura of the room. I think that's probably what sums up that venue, the aura, more than anything else.
That's one thing that it probably wasn't intentional at the time, but I do know that we made at the, you know, organisational level.
Yep.
Although the business wasn't trending in the right direction, we wanted people just to feel comfortable being whoever they were in the venue. And every venue claims that they do that, particularly if they're from Melbourne and that's just their whole shtick of you can be anybody you want when you come in here. You can be.
But shower first.
Yeah. And our bartenders are going to talk your ear off to try and get you to buy more drinks, even if you want to be left alone.
But you can't manufacture that like I said, that word, the aura of the venue. You can.
But part of the aura was leaving people alone that wanted to be left alone.
Yeah, and it got its own personality out of that, or multiple personalities. Yeah. More than anything.
Yeah, a few of us developed those back in those days.
I think we all did, bud.
Yeah, just strange. A strange time to come, because obviously I was there for when it was pre-music, and then yep. It worked up into the one of the premier non-metro music venues in New South Wales, and it happened to be right on the highway, so arguably it's probably, other than Canberra, the most important stop for some bands.
100%.
Particularly if you're in the heavier rock metal mm-hmm. genres, it was an absolute must-stop venue. And then it peaked, and then all the rubbish that happened.
Plateaued.
And then you got there. It might have just been kicking.
One little kick left in it.
A really poor analogy, incredibly poor analogy, is when people are ill and they have one last hurrah of what feels like a euphoria almost. Yeah. There was a euphoric feeling for a few weeks there in 2009 where we'd all given up on the fact that it was going to stay open forever, and it was more about let's enjoy the time that it's still open.
It's disappointing that I never got to be a part of that, because every time we catch up with all the boys, everyone brings up that conversation, and I'm like, I went to one show.
Yeah.
But I definitely felt like I missed out on something incredible. Yeah. And now that it's not a venue that even, excuse the pun, that entertains the idea of music. I've done a few shows there recently, mate. Nothing against the venue at all. Like, the people that work there are great. It's a very family orientated venue now.
It's just not built for music anymore.
I've played more people in my bedroom, mate, than some of those gigs.
Yeah.
And again, it's no one's fault. I'm not blaming anyone, but the difference, you know, I'm sitting in a room where thousands of other musos have stood before and packed out gig nights. Him and playing to an empty bar.
Yeah, which is different.
Oh, mate, it's. I work harder when I play to less people than I do with a room full of people. Every time.
Yeah.
I feel more exposed. I think I sing worse when there's barely anyone there. Maybe my interests aren't peaked, so I'm not concentrating as much. So I'll catch myself singing an off note. And I'm like, I don't usually do that in that part of the song.
Yeah, you're probably packing up shop in your head. Oh, like, man, you just want it to be over.
100%.
Because you're not entertaining.
No, and that's, I don't like doing the gigs where it's quiet. I like being that energetic, getting the people from that table 9 over there to get them up dancing all night to, you know, requests that they want to hear. Sell my soul a bit. But I enjoy what I do. And there was a while there was a bit of naysay about being a cover musician or original, like, you know, yeah, selling out. And look, everyone's got to be talented to be in a band, no matter what sort of music you're playing.
Exactly. And you've just touched on one of the main reasons I wanted to have you on tonight, and we might just come back to that.
Yeah,
but just one more funny comment about how a venue can exist in time and then not be there anymore or change. I walk into Soden's now and it's, well, you know, adorned. Everything looks nice and
almost perfect, right?
Yeah. And it feels like a small kind of hip RSL.
Yeah, like at least Crosswood style.
A family-oriented place, but kind of clean at the same time, like modern clean.
It has no personality.
I look at that area where the kitchen and the dining room is, and I think about the night that Himsa, an American metal band, played there, and it was so hot, and it happened for Parkway Drive and a few other bands, but they had a little crowd. Normally, when there was heaps of perspiration in the room, it was Butterfly Effect or Parkway. Or
yeah.
Himsa, I think, played to 80 people. And the crowd went so hard and it was so hot that the water was settling on the roof and not just running down the walls like normal, because people used to ask what the stains on the walls were sometimes, and because if they didn't get cleaned by the cleaner, that was sweat stains running back down the wall.
But
during Himsa's set, the sweat had started working its way towards the middle of the room.
Like almost like it was like, raining, like perspiration. Yeah.
It was like rivers running together into the middle of the room, then dropping onto the mosh pit. And now I walk in there and I'm like, this is probably the cleanest party I've ever seen.
Oh, I'm so glad I wasn't there for that.
It was pretty rock and roll, mate. You would have loved it.
That's really cool.
It probably wasn't great if you copped it in the eyeball, but it's just how things have changed. And now it couldn't be further from that. And I mean, there might not be a business case for people having sweat dripping into their eyes off the roof anymore. But
oh, we'll never know now, will we? No, well, that's shut it down too quickly.
So just to get onto yourself as the muso.
Yep.
And we might as well cover it now before we get too distracted and go on some tangents. I talked to Dan Caulfield, our mutual friend,
yep,
recently about how over maybe the last decade, the lines between artistic credibility and being an original and a cover artist,
yep,
have all blurred together. Yeah. And it's not as, like, it used to be very didactic in certain genres.
Oh,
if you play a cover, you're treading a line of credibility.
Mm.
If you're in other genres, if you play anyone's music or even a song that sounds like someone else, you're a sellout.
Yep.
And then there was the prog rock genre, which Well is part of.
Yep.
That if you even thought about another band being good, you're a sellout. And then there's obviously other genres where covers have been more popular.
Uh-huh.
We're living in a world now, and Dan, more intelligently than me, he put it down a lot to nostalgia, and I put it down to the fact that a lot of musicians have grown up with YouTube, which yep. is a mismatch of people playing covers and originals, and no one really sees.
That's a really good point.
No one sees the delineation anymore. No.
I have a third option too. Now I'm going to try and remember what I was about to say. I had it in my head.
Well, can I pitch a third option to you?
Please,
that's why I wanted to join
fourth.
The third option that I have thought about since is what's wrong with people playing songs that they love in front of people? Because that used to be the main issue people had.
Yeah,
why are you playing someone else's song? Unless you're a cover band.
Yeah, of course.
But very few musicians come fully formed out of the womb with no influences. They're not just rolling
exactly
out
right.
onto the floor and just go Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, that's a really good
point. Is that a
G-string?
No, this is the umbilical cord, baby. That's not happening. So everyone's got influences.
Such a vivid description.
Yeah.
But no, you're right.
It's a theatre of the mind in here, mate.
And everyone gets inspiration from different walks of music, walks of life with music. You know, nowadays a lot of bands are getting influenced by covers of songs, like a band, Our Last Night. They're very famous for doing a lot of, like, heavier covers of the top 40 songs. They now have a very successful original career, but that bankrolled them as a band to have enough money to tour their music. And it's also a good point of reference that all these – I don't know if you remember, I can't remember the band's name. They brought out a Taylor Swift cover.
Okay.
It was done in like a little, was it I Prevail? It was I Prevail. They did a Taylor Swift cover and they went from, the original artists who did a cover song on YouTube, blew them internationally, like blew them up. And all of a sudden they were getting then they were getting booked for shows for the original shows.
Yeah.
Because of this platform they used for something a little bit sideways to what they were doing, which was originals. They did a cover, got noticed from that, and then their career took off. Same with Hands Like Houses. A lot of people who didn't know the hard rock, heavier genre, they did a cover of Torn by Natalie Imbruglia, which wasn't really her song, but and that got them mainstream attention. So when they play those bigger shows, they'll play that song every now and then to keep those mainstream people, I use that word loosely, mainstream.
Yeah, I get what you mean.
That's not an insult.
No.
You know, and it's almost, it brings people together now at shows, especially if you've done stuff like that.
We'll probably go into more about how you've oriented yourself with doing covers. And there was one moment recently, and we might start at the end and work backwards.
Yep.
I thought to myself, what song are they about to play? And this is a recent gig that you did on an emo night, and then you announced that it was going to be an Evanescence song. And I saw half the guys in the room just shake their head like, nah, come on, this is too far. And you're already rocking out. Like, the whole night was awesome. That song literally demolished a building. This is a band playing a song no one likes in front of an audience that no one wanted to hear it and fucking dominating.
Well, the thing
was unbelievable how good that was.
Mate, we got the videos at home, we got it filmed, and I just get goosebumps every time I see it.
Do you feel like you were actually in the band playing it to their crowd? Because that's how it felt to me. I'm like, wait, I love this.
Mate,
I'm confused
I
right
worked,
now.
Everyone in the band didn't want to do this song. We dropped a couple songs that coulda, shoulda, woulda made the final set list. And I was like, we needed to find more songs for Laura, our female front woman singing, that wasn't Paramore. Because if you think about it, there wasn't too many popular female fronted bands in that era. And we gave her a couple other songs and she smashed them. But I thought with how the night was going to go, I just envisioned in my head, I had this image in my head where I thought this song would take the night. I was wrong. It went tenfold above that. I had blokes come up to me on, I hate that kind of Evanescence song, but holy shit, that was an amazing performance. And I had no word of a lie, I had at least 5 to 6 people come up to me within the minute we finished that gig, coming up to me going, that was the best song I've ever heard live. They were drinking, so let's just, yeah. You know what I mean?
I was leading in there a little bit. I had to pull back a little bit, Jackie.
But what I liked about that comment, not that it was the best song they ever heard live, because they were so immersed in that moment, that they felt compelled to tell the rest of the band how awesome that was.
Yeah.
For that time and place that they were in, it took them back to those songs, like a lot of songs we did. You know, I love Taking Back Sunday.
Yeah.
I love The Used. I've got The Used tattooed on my arm. But, you know, those songs meant so much to me. I didn't know bringing this out was if it was going to be a selfish decision that I just wanted to play these songs. Yeah. I've always dreamt of
because it's a somewhat maligned genre now, isn't it?
Oh.
It's not really something. It had no legs.
No.
Not like we thought it did at the time.
No. And it was such a minority that was really into it. And bringing back to that option D that I was talking about, which was C but now D, is that a little bit on the nostalgia. A lot of these albums are having their 15-20-year reunions, you know, 10-15-20-year reunions. So all of a sudden it's back in people's minds. You know, they haven't listened to these songs for, they've gone up and had families, got careers, and all of a sudden that first intro of Welcome to the Black Parade comes on. Even if you're wearing the whitest of clothes, all of a sudden you're dressed in black, your fingernails are black, you got your hair in your face, like it takes you back to a much simpler time, and that's what it did for me and the rest of the guys in the band, was that it was nostalgic, yes, but it just reminded me, like, you know, why I fell in love with music in the first place.
Yeah. And I think what I realized that night, that was by no means my favorite genre. It was probably one or two genres to the side of what I liked.
Yep.
But it made me realize that nostalgia isn't bad when you're nostalgic about a period of great music. And I get,
absolutely
I
agree.
Also understand why when I was coming up, people older than me were so anti-covers if you were in an original band, because if you went 15 years back, you were in the middle of the hair metal genre. And that's not something, I mean, there's great albums around there, and it's
if sure.
The fashion of it and the thrill of that music is nostalgic, but the emotion's probably not.
Yeah, no, I feel where you come from,
and
sure.
It was, even though it was the emo thing was kind of a point in time, pretty short point in time, really.
Yeah, about 7 years.
Yeah, it actually generated some really amazing songs. It'd be like if you were nostalgic in the 80s.
Yeah.
Were your nostalgia 15-20 years, Beatles, early Rolling Stones, going into Aerosmith, which still freaks me out that they're that old. There's all these bands through to Queen, Pink Floyd, Genesis, like Led Zeppelin, The Who. It would be cool to be nostalgic about the greatest bands of all time.
Well, and also another point too is how big the emo scene, you know, emo for lack of a better word, it wasn't just a music genre.
No.
It merged into a culture. It opened up fashion, skinny jeans, dyed hair. It wasn't really a big thing. And that just didn't happen around the emo scene. It's 2019 now. That stuff is still prevalent in society today. You don't see many of the hair metal band people, that fashion continuing on 20 years later. That died, born and died in the 80s. Same with mullets, born and died in the, you know, late 80s. God bless us.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like, just on my mind right now, it's the only sort of genre that created much more. It brought people together, whereas a lot of scenes were about, this is our scene, fuck off.
Yeah, and many still are.
Yeah, 100%. But, like, it was an outcast thing. But who didn't feel like an outcast? Even, you know, the popular ones still had days where they didn't feel like they fit in. You know, my old man was a principal at school. From kindergarten to year 10, he was my principal.
Okay.
So I knew a lot of people. People knew me, but I still didn't. I grew up in a small country town. I wanted to play music. Music wasn't a big thing.
You're speaking my language. Yeah. I haven't done the same thing. Yeah.
And most of my Sundays on weekends was spent in a garage with my three best mates playing music. from 10 o'clock in the morning to 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Thankfully, my neighbours never, ever came and knocked on the door and said, can you guys shut the fuck up because this is stupid. And we were horrible. I was a drumming singer. I was a drummer and a singer.
And you just started.
No, I've been playing in bands, live bands, since I was 10.
Okay, so you had a bit of skill.
No. just
you had years up.
I was terrible on drums. I could play all the parts, but I played too fast. My tempos were all over shop. I was singing. I was going through puberty. My balls were dropping here, left, right, and centre. So I was hitting notes that weren't even in any register. So
your neighbour's walking over. Well, I was going to say something, but then the pitch went down.
It's like, I think he knows he's bad enough. I don't need to come and add any more to it.
And that was pre that music?
Yeah. So I was,
what were you playing? What sort of stuff?
3 Days Grace.
Okay.
One Maroon 5 song, which was Harder to Breathe, their best rock. They had a really good rock song.
They have other songs?
And it's not one of those.
Is that the one that goes, din din?
Din it. Dan it. Really good groove. We basically played the 3 Days Grace album front and back. Don't hate me for this, Nickelback as well.
Yeah,
not the big songs on the radio. We're talking about the ones that the rock have balls of the floor rock songs, which they have.
Yes, and I guess they are world renowned for how good their live show is.
That was my first concert I ever went to. Was 3 Days Grace, Nickelback, and a band called Plunger.
I remember Plunger.
Yep, the singer was in a wheelchair.
He was a very good singer too.
Phenomenal. They then changed their name to White House not long after that.
The White House?
The White House. Yeah.
It does ring a bell, but I didn't think it was the White House.
Might not be. Might just want to paint this up.
I'm just picturing a guy not in a wheelchair with orange hair right now. Sorry.
They're both disabled.
Yeah. So you obviously went through that phase of that music. And we don't need to relitigate the past because we all had our own reasons for getting into that stuff. But what brought about the idea to do that show? But if we maybe go back a step further, you've been involved in what I'm calling these dedicated tributes to genre or to an artist or a time period for a couple of years now.
Mm-hmm.
And you seem to have been one of the more heavily involved people in that scene that's popped up of let's do a show about X or let's do it. Show about why band or why genre.
Yeah.
So what made you want to get involved with that?
I've been asked to do a few. The ones I did pick that I wanted to be a part of were the ones that meant something to me. I didn't want to take a place in a band where I was just being there to be an extra guitarist, an extra bum on the seat kind of thing. The first one I did was the Sounds of Seattle show. Which was a tribute to sort of like, you know, Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Alice in Chains. And Nirvana, I remember specifically the very first time, this is the only sort of song I can remember of hearing for the first time that rocked me to my core. I was at a disco in Tumut, right? A disco. I'm there trying to impress some girl that I can't remember the name of. And this song came on. And I grabbed my neighbour who was at she was really big, she was massive into that sort of scene. And I grabbed my shoulder. I said, what the fuck is this song? I've never heard of this. And she goes, oh, this is Nirvana. This is Smells Like Teen Spirit. The first song I was always, okay, backtrack for a second. My first two albums that I ever bought was Backstreet Boys and Five. Okay.
What was the second one?
Five. Another boy band.
Yeah, right.
From Britain.
Okay.
I didn't develop my music style until I heard that song. Mate, I wore puffy jackets. I wanted to be a Backstreet Boy so bad. It was shocking. But I heard that song and something clicked. I went home to my dad. He picked me up, took me home. I said, Dad, I found a band that I think you and I can go see together. And he's like, oh, bad fucking time. And I was like, I want to go watch Nirvana when they come to Australia next. And he's like, bud, about 10 years too late, he's dead. So so I just remember being in that room. I could see myself on that dance floor when it happened, grabbing my friend Emma and saying, you know, her telling me who it was. I didn't forget. This is before phones where you could type stuff in. I have a horrible memory, but I remember that song. I remember when the chorus kicked in. I just remember everything changed as far as what I loved about music. I've always been a fan of melody. No matter how hard or soft the band is, as long as it has a good melody, you know, I like that sort of style. But when I heard that and like just the angst in it, I've never heard that scream before because I only listened to sort of what I listened to, which was Backstreet Boys and Five, a bit of Spice Girls, I had a younger sister, and whatever Dad listened to, which was Van Halen, Black Sabbath, which I'm still a massive fan of Black Sabbath, Deep Purple. But that one moment, from that moment on, I changed everything about myself as far as what music was happening, what I was listening to, even how I dressed. All of a sudden, I got angst. I had teen angst all of a sudden, just like that.
Wow. You sure that wasn't puffer jacket related?
Oh, just don't tell Rudy.
So we might go down that rabbit hole before we come back to talking about the gigs that you've been doing more recently.
Yep.
It's funny that you bring up a life-changing moment. I was telling someone this story the other day. The new Tool album's come out.
Yep.
And I was reminiscing about how I first discovered Tool, because everyone has a story about when you first, quite often for people, it's not when you first hear them, it's when you first get them. And they can be a long time apart.
Absolutely.
And I saw this film clip by this band, and it was around a swimming pool. It was super angry, probably the most angry song I'd ever heard. And I thought, that's cool. I'm going to remember that name. And I remembered it had an O in it, and it was four letters. And I went home, and my mum used to buy these things, and they were like Mushroom Records Club or something.
Yeah, yep.
And they kept coming to the house for years and years. And I looked in there going through, I'm like looking for the name of this artist. And I'm like, Tool, Enema. It just came out. And I was thinking, that must be it. That sounds familiar. Like it.
Yeah.
And so I just ordered that. It came and I saw the case and I thought, that doesn't look like the kind of iconography I was expecting of this band. And I put it on and I realized within 2 seconds of Stink Fist, oh, the band's name was Korn. And I've ordered Tool. It's the greatest album I've ever heard in my life at that point. And I became an instant Tool nutbag. By accidentally ordering Tool instead of Korn. And
wow.
For the first couple of seconds of did, just like I was thinking, oh, I don't know, would I have preferred the Korn record to Enema by Tool?
How long did it take you to get, not just like what you were hearing, but to understand what they were trying to do, or what they did do?
Not long, because I still think Stink Fist is probably my favourite song of all time.
It's a phenomenal song.
Yeah, and that being the first song on the record. But to get into the longer material of like Lateralis, that took me probably 6 months to fully absorb.
Okay.
The mathematical wackiness of the rhythms and the long drawn out segments with no singing, and the fact that the 10th time you listen to it, it feels different.
That's what I love talking about, when especially about Tool. You put headphones on and you hear something new in one of their songs every time you put your headphones on.
And it's funny you mentioned that too with the new record. One of the big complaints a lot of people have when they first listen to it was there's a lot of unresolved tension. They'll build up to nothing over and over and over again. But once you know that's going to happen.
You can put that to bed, can't you?
You can just like, okay, I know this isn't going to be some huge crescendo, but where does it actually go? And then it goes a little bit further out than what you realise.
I suppose they weren't trying to do what it's always been done. You build up something, you go big, and then you bring it back down or you end it.
Because they're going into some other kind of motif okay, you thought we were going to go this far out. We're actually going all the way out here. How do you feel about that? But, it took me 2 seconds to love Undertow when I got – because as soon as I had Enema, I'm like, I need everything this band's ever done, of which was only basically one other album.
Exactly what you're supposed to do.
And I loved it, and I played those two. And I used to burn them down to tapes so I could listen to them on my bike.
Holy moly. Yeah, I remember just doing that.
Yeah.
Did you buy the tape or did you buy what form did you get it in?
I used to buy the double-sided long play tape. So it had the like twice 90 minutes, I think they were, 45, which is long enough for a Tool record.
For one song?
Yeah.
I remember we used to have the two tape deck and you get like a couple songs and I'd record – one song from if I listened to whatever tape it was, I'd record my favourite song off that front side and then the back side, and then I'd get another tape in and I'd make my own mixtape that way. That's how I started making mixtapes.
Tape to tape?
Yeah. So it was a two tape deck. So you could record what was played in the other one through that. It was really cool. So I had all these mixtapes. I found them actually. Dad gave them to me when he moved home out of our family house, and I don't have a tape player, but I'm going to look into getting one. Just so I can hear what kind of crap I listen to.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be a lot of boy bands. And
a little bit of Disney, no doubt.
And a little bit of 30-second break in the bridge where it's a simple beat so you can do a dance routine.
I had those dance moves down pat.
So I guess the question now becomes, to move from Tool to something far more serious, when is there going to be a nostalgic gig hosted by yourself that's only boy bands?
Don't laugh at this. I've been thinking about it.
Wow.
I honestly have been thinking about it.
You're talking about doing musical versions, like rock versions, or are you talking about actually getting people together and doing
what you hear of their music on a CD is completely different to what they show live. They actually use real instruments live. It's not sampled stuff that they use. It's everyone plays instruments and they rock them up a bit. So I would like to do like a boy band meets sort of rock sort of vibe. Still keep those harmonies and everything they kept about, you know, the melody, but keep the music a little bit more up tempo, bit more modern instruments as opposed to, like, I wouldn't, you know, taking the piano and the synths out and using actually with guitars.
That sounds awesome. But what's the idea you've got for after that? Because I'm probably going to skip. I'll come to the one that's in the future.